This is the One Thing Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Adam Rindy. The One Thing Podcast brings together leaders in functional and naturopathic medicine to discuss actionable information that may unlock puzzles in the areas of gut health, brain health, metabolism, and longevity. Please note, these episodes do not replace the opinion of your doctor. They are not intended to diagnose or treat any condition. Please discuss this information with your provider and discuss your own unique personal health history before adapting this information. Please subscribe to our episodes so that you can stay on top of the most current information in these areas of medicine. In this episode, I welcome in Dr. Anne-Marie Fine. She's an internationally recognized doctor, award-winning researcher, well-known author, and CEO of Fine Natural Products, LLC. She's also a director of education of the Naturopathic Academy of Environmental Medicine and science advisor for madesafe.org. She is considered an expert in environmental medicine. She was influenced by our late great Dr. Walter Crinian, who was a pioneer in the field of environmental medicine. And you can find her website at dranmariefine.com. Dr. Fine speaks to us today about the immunotoxicity of plastics. We go into the problem with plastics in our environment and in our food supply and the potential disruptions that plastics have on our health, not only the immune system, but also the endocrine system. We talk about routes of exposure, avoidance, and potential elimination practices. And generally, we have a really great discussion about environmental medicine and how it really is an area of our life that we have great control over once we educate ourselves and learn all the different ways that we're exposed to toxins in our environment. I really enjoyed this discussion because it was practical and informative, and I hope you enjoy it as well. If you do like what I'm doing here at the One Thing Podcast, please make sure that you forward these episodes and press like and subscribe on your podcast player and wherever you listen to this podcast. So without further ado, I welcome you into the next episode of the One Thing Podcast with Dr. Anne-Marie Fine. Dr. Fine, welcome to the One Thing Podcast. It's great to be here with you today.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I enjoyed getting to know you a little bit more while we were offline, and we were talking a little bit about some people we know in common, which I definitely want to go into in a few minutes here. But I'd love to just kind of hear sort of what the last year has been like for you, what you've been up to lately. I know you're involved with a lot of professional avenues and interests. What's been your main focus as of late?
Well, that's a really good leading question. For the last year and a half, I want to say Dr. Lynn Patrick and I have put together a course called Environmental Medicine Education International, and it's a one-year postgraduate course in environmental medicine that basically takes off where Dr. Walter Crinian's Spirit Med one-year postgrad program left off. So he was our mentor, and we didn't want this information to die. In fact, he asked us, when he was in the hospital, to please carry on his work. And so it took us a while to put it together because we started from scratch, but then we realized, this emerging field of environmental medicine is just rapidly growing and changing, and it's necessitating ongoing education. And so we've already added so many different modules to our educational portion that were not in his original course. Things like EMF and EMR, for example, and climate change and, cancer and so we've really added a lot to the offerings. And one of the things I want to begin with is I know there's a lot of alumni out there of Spirit Med. And if you're listening to this today and you want to get updated on the information, we have a really extremely good discount for SpiritMed alumni, because we want you to come back and be part of our community and have your knowledge be updated. And we want you to be part of our grand rounds. We do 6 hours of live grand rounds every month on Zoom. And we have global experts in environmental medicine. And we do case presentations. And it's just a fantastic way to really keep on top of what's going on in environmental medicine. And so our course is, it's basically online, but it also, you know, we have the we have the Zoom 6 hour grand rounds. And so even more recently, we are taking it kind of more on the road, and we just signed a contract with the Cleveland Clinic, and we're going to be training their doctors.
Wow. Congratulations.
Medicine. Thank you. And you know what was really interesting there, this is their functional medicine group. What's really interesting there is that they, you know, the director contacted me, and she admitted that their doctors didn't even know how to test for or assess something as simple as mercury. Does this person have too much mercury, right? How would I know? You know, Where's it coming from? Just really basic things like that. And yet they're, you know, they're a functional medicine group that have the background, you know, to be able to deal with these kinds of patients. And so we're really extremely excited to start taking it into more integrative groups outside of our group. It's a separate, it's a little bit of a separate program. It's not, we're not doing a year for them. We're doing something smaller. It's called Foundations of Environmental Medicine. But what we are getting out into the integrative clinic. So that's very, very exciting. So we offer 30 hours of continuing medical education. And our doctors really like to know that. And our website is emeiglobal.com. And we do have doctors from all over the world. And we are reaching out as, you know, as best we can, because this is really vital. This is like the missing link in our education. And, you know, the naturopathic doctors among us have always been grounded in this kind of information. But to a lot of the other integrative doctors, this is new. It's just simply, it's not taught at all. I mean, maybe you'll get an hour on lead, maybe, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was looking at the curriculum, and it's just fascinating what you guys have put together, you know, everything from lab testing, assessment, and then all the kind of deep dives into the various areas of exposures. It's just such an interesting course. And I hope that today we'll talk a little bit of a slice of it. I know you have a special interest in the skin as a detox organ and sort of a protective organ against toxins as well. Can you kind of share if that's still sort of one of your main focus, or if you pivoted into other areas?
Well, I really got interested in the skin because my female patients were asking me when I started saying, you know, parabens are bad, or phthalates are bad, or fragrance is bad. They're like, well, sure, Dr. Fine, but then what should we use? And I started looking around at products and really reading the ingredients, and it did not meet my standards. And so I actually learned how to formulate in Europe and came up with my own line, super clean. So clean, you can't even find it today. I'm not in production.
Okay.
It's super clean. The problem with organic natural materials is, especially in the current COVID situation, we have a lot of supply chain issues.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm not in production right now, but that was sort of the impetus to get me more interested in, you know, we women, oh my gosh, all day starting in the shower. It's, you know, your scalp is one of the most absorptive skin surfaces on your body. It's your scalp. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've got shampoo and conditioner and hairspray and, I don't know, other stuff. And then we put, you know, body lotion on and, you know, makeup and, you know, moisturizer and all this stuff. So I really started thinking, you know, with the female patients, for all of us, this is kind of the low hanging fruit, because you don't have to go without. You just get better products, better underarm deodorant. It turns out your armpit skin is really absorptive as well. Mm-hmm. And so what you, and you've got all, you know, your lymph nodes are there. And so getting, you know, cleaner underarm deodorant and makeup and body care and getting rid of the phthalates for all of our female and our male patients too, because they're in the shower with shower gel and shampoo too. The it looks to our patients, it may look unwieldy or hard, but it's basically once you make that substitution, you just keep buying that. There's no decision. There's no, you spend zero time on it. You just keep buying it. So it's really just a little bit of education and then buy the new product and then just, you know, keep buying it. So that's how I got interested in that. But also last year, I had an article in the Townsend Letter. Mm-hmm. And the title of it was called The Skin as Exposome. And I really wanted to talk about, when we talk about environmental toxicants and everything, it's like, you know, a lot of times we're thinking about ingestion, right? Or, you know, exposure in the air or exposure in the water. And it's like a lot of this stuff is just coming through your skin. And so I wanted to talk about the skin as a root of toxins coming into your body. Now, you know, as naturopathic doctors, we're pretty familiar with the idea of toxins come out in a sauna or sweat, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's good. The skin is actually an excretory organ. But what is less appreciated is the fact that things can come in. And, and by the way, I'll just give you a little tip here, which kind of depressed me, but phthalates, which are found in fragrances, they are plasticizers. They're found in plastics, but also they're found in personal care products as fragrances. Not only are they absorbed dermally through your skin as you put it on, but they're absorbed through the ambient air. So all this time that I was walking into the department store, and the perfume lady would say, "Oh, yeah. Want to get sprayed?" And I felt so virtuous saying no and walking by. But really, if you've got exposed skin, you're getting all of the phthalates through your skin anyway. And so what that means is, you know, if you work in an office and there are people wearing scented products, you know, you have dermal ambient exposure. And this has been shown in the literature. So this is why in my green clinic in Scottsdale, I had a no fragrance policy. And many, I didn't know that you could absorb it from the ambient air, but I had a no fragrance policy. And this is why it's a good idea. That's one more source.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, after what the world has been through during the pandemic era, I think people are now more than ever able to accept, you know, kind of the invisibility of the exposome. You know, it's like before it was, you know, it was like, well, I wasn't coughing or I didn't sneeze or I didn't, you know, if you didn't see it, it didn't happen.
Right.
You know? But now I think we're so aware that there's just so many different routes of exposure that we're just not even aware happening around us. So, you know, back in, I don't think the 60s, Dustin Hoffman, that movie, The Graduate, was like a big kind of line in that movie about that the future was in plastics, right?
I wrote an article on that.
Did you?
Global, I guess. I think I titled it "What Dustin Hoffman Got Wrong in the Movie The Graduate," something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he was a young Berkeley student, like a graduate of Berkeley, and he was just, you know, that was like the thing. Like now these days, it's, you know, Bitcoin is the future or whatever. Where did they get this wrong?
Wow. I mean, it's a huge industry. Everything is plastic. It's unbelievable. They're even making wooden floors out of plastic or vinyl. You know, it's hard to get away from. It's just a huge, huge industry. It started in the 60s. And we can talk about, globally, a study came out last year. And this is pretty alarming. It looked at, so it's not just BPA and phthalates and plasticizers and DEHP. It's not just that. Also, we have the problem of microplastics, 5 millimeters or less. So actual plastics, not phthalates or BPA, which you really can't see. Let's be honest. It leaches into your food, or if you touch a thermal receipt, it absorbs into your skin, but you really can't see it. But the microplastics, you can kind of see. I mean, it's real. It came from bigger plastics. Now it's microplastics. Okay. The problem is so huge that the study said over the course of a week, the average person ingests 1 credit card worth of microplastics per week, 5 grams per week. And
we're ingesting that, or we're
ingesting it. We're ingesting it. Most of it's coming from our water.
Okay.
So tap water and bottled water, both. Bottled water has twice the plastic as tap water. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have come to the realization that tap water might not be the cleanest, but then they're all buying these crates of bottled water from Costco that's got twice the plastics, and then you've got the phthalate issue, the plasticizer issue going on as well. So people are ingesting a lot of plastic. It's in our seafood. It's in our meat. It's in our salt, our beer. Recently, in the last couple of months, there was an article in the published literature on autopsies, and they're finding plastics in people's organs now, particularly the organs of, filtration, like the liver and the kidneys, of course, but also
the brain, right? The brain is considered a liver of filtration, right?
They found it in the brain, too. So,
I'm sorry, did I say a liver of filtration, an organ of filtration? Yeah.
An organ of filtration. They're finding it in the spleen. They're finding it. Okay, so that is not good that we're finding, visible in an autopsy. We're just finding all these little pieces of plastic. And, it has been the case for several years now that they open up fish and, sea creatures, and they're finding plastics, right? Because our oceans are full of plastics. So our seafood is full of plastics and plastic parts. And now we're full of plastic parts. So there's really two in the plastic phenomenon. There's two things we're worried about. It's actual microplastics, but it's also the kind of less visible things that are used to make plastic softer, or in the case of BPA, a little bit harder in the case of polycarbonates. So we have both those things going on. And the problem with the plastics, the plastic problem alone is a problem, but plastics adsorb polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and heavy metals. So other pollutants in the air or in the environment get absorbed onto these plastics. So if you've got the plastics inside of you, you've also got the PAHs and the, there could be other chemicals on it as well, PM, 2.5.
So it's like a vector.
It's like a vector for pollutants. Just clean, clear plastic, which is bad anyway, but it's carrying other things as well. And by the way, you're breathing in the plastics, which is a little bit horrifying because we all have to breathe. That is not the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. we're all over with the masks thing. That's.
Oh, by the way, I have a talk coming up soon, and there's this new 2022 article that just came out on the blue surgical masks.
Yeah.
Full of phthalates.
Great. Okay.
Full of phthalates. So, okay, you not only have dermal because it's on your face, but your mucous membranes and your mouth and your nose are right there, so you have the ability to breathe it in, right? And then are those particles getting into the air, and then we're getting ambient, absorption as well. So those blue things that people are wearing or have been wearing for 2 years. And, you know, it's kind of nuts because diethylhexyl phthalate, DEHP, is like the main, there's like 12 different phthalates in it, but it's like the main one. But, you know, DEHP is on California's Prop 65 list because of its cancer-causing potential. So it's like, even though there's some awareness that DEHP might be, you might want to get rid of it, it's like the main one in all of these masks that people have been wearing for 2 years. So yeah, phthalates in the mask. That was new to me, but I'll be talking about that.
Well, yeah, it's, we're just going to be, we're just the tip of the iceberg of what we're learning about all the aftermath of this last couple of years, I'm sure. So and I want to kind of circle back also, just because I think a lot of people listening to this would be, you know, thinking like, well, wait, what about, you know, is it really offing, you know, if it's a new mask, or if you only wear it for like 10 minutes, or if you, you know, if you're throwing it away every time you use it, or if, you know, if you're not exposed to heat, like those kinds of questions are always like granular questions that I think people, you know, want to know from a practicality standpoint. Like if they run into Trader Joe's and throw one on for a few seconds just to comply with the store policy, is that okay? You know, those are things I'd love to circle back at, just like general stuff like that.
Yeah, I'd love to know that too. I haven't seen anything on the phthalate issue with the face mask and how many seconds does it take to absorb it. But parabens, there is a study on paraben absorption, and it's like applying a body lotion once to your body. I mean, it's in the blood, like an hour later, it's in the blood. And then BPA, they have done those kind of studies with BPA. BPA has like, there's over 10,000 publications today on BPA. And so they've done those studies. And the BPA from the thermal receipts, it's within seconds. I mean, they've literally done the studies where someone is ready to draw blood and they're holding, you know, the receipt, and they're timing it and trying to see how long does it take, and it takes seconds for it to go through the BPA. It only takes seconds for it to go through the skin. But I have not seen that on the phthalates. But, you know, obviously, you know, if you, you know, you would think if you did it for 10 minutes versus 8 hours, you would think that's much better, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I would think. Doing the plastic as little as possible would be great. But what I do is I do a cloth mask. I don't even do plastics, and then I just wash it after every use.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you kind of outlined one of the key problems with plastics is, you know, just this vector component of it, that it pulls other toxicants into the body along with it. And so the aftermath of that is what?
Well, the other thing that we're learning is the plastics are immunotoxic as well. And so when we think of plastics, we think of them as endocrine disruptors, things that are affecting us on the hormonal level. And, you know, hormones themselves work at nanomolar levels, very, very, very small levels. Well, so do the endocrine disruptors. Very, very low levels are causing problems in our endocrine system. Well, somebody thought, well, what about the immune system? And now there's all this research that I really just started noticing in the last few years on immunotoxicity. And basically, it affects the immune system. It's one of the targets of the endocrine disrupting chemicals. The same way it affects hormones, it affects the immune system. It dysregulates both the innate and the adaptive immune systems. And, you know, I can give you some examples. And
yeah,
one of them would be, I think I'm going to go into BPA. BPA suppresses your macrophages. Well, one thing we learned from COVID is how important the macrophages are, right?
Yeah.
So BPA induces suppression of the macrophage activity. It's pro-inflammatory via NF-kappa B. And there's also genotoxic and DNA effects on the macrophages, DEHP, diethylhexylphthalate. It enhances the inflammatory molecules in the macrophages, the chemokines. And, you know, I've got a whole, the last couple of years, I've done an entire presentation on this. The BPA also impairs phagocytosis, you know, and bacteria killing in our immune cells. And BPA reduced chemotaxis and the ability to kill MRSA in human blood. Well, MRSA is something that has been on the rise in the last few years. Something like methylparaben inhibits your neutrophils. And, you know, BPA can activate the mast cells and degranulate them. So there's a lot of interesting information that's come out about various plastics and endocrine disrupting chemicals and how they affect our immune system. And this becomes critical, especially when we consider where we've been the last 2 years with our immune systems.
Right.
How strong they are and what's going on in them. And so.
Yeah. That's interesting because, you know, for years, just from a clinical setting, people who flag for having like a toxic burden are generally people who would fit into categories of like problems with allergies or skin problems and all these kind of like pro-inflammatory problems. And, you know, I wonder if we can understand that a little bit better now with what you just commented on.
Because Dr. Krinian taught us that when he was a new doctor, he wanted to go into allergies. Yeah. An allergist, right? I'm sure you remember the story. He was your teacher too. He said, I wanted to become an allergist. He's like, I figured everybody's got allergies. It would be steady work. And so he did. He got into the field. And then he said what he discovered was the reason why people had all these allergies is because they were toxic. And that was really the root cause of all of the allergies and the asthma and all of these things was they had a toxic body burden that was damaging their immune system. And when he taught me that in medical school, I actually went up to him after class and told him that was, a bunch of bunk, you know, because, you know, I actually have asthma and allergies. And this is sort of the way I came in to becoming a naturopathic doctor. So I was like, I don't know, Dr. Krinian, I don't think that theory holds up or whatever. And he's like, why would you say that? And then I, you know, start talking about my own case. And I started studying it a little bit more. And, you know, I was in his class and it turns out that it plays a huge role. It's so true. And I literally have zero problems with asthma or allergies. In fact, this is really funny because I was such an allergic, person growing up. But I have done so well that a few years ago, I don't know what I was exposed to, but my nose started running, you know, a little bit of allergies. And I had forgotten what it felt like to have a runny nose. I actually called one of my physician friends and said, I have this clear nasal discharge coming out of my nose, but I'm not sick. I'm not coughing. I don't have a fever. I can't imagine what it is. And she's like, how about allergies? I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the runny nose.
Right.
Did I forget the runny nose? Like, yeah. I completely forgot about the runny nose. And I remember going to bed every night with a box of tissue, stuffing my pockets with tissues, my coats. And then walking around, I would have a tissue scrunched in my hand. And I just, you know, went away. So anyway, yeah, that's completely valid. And so,
yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, you know, shifting to TH, there's, you know, this whole concept of TH1 versus TH2, different parts of your immune system. And just how you explained it, my brain went to like, oh, wow, it must just push us into more of a TH2 dominance, you know, kind of shift in the immune system where it's putting out inflammation, and the part that fights viruses and infections and cancers is more suppressed.
Right. Right.
That's really interesting. I flashback to being a kid in the 80s and, you know, the big hair era and hairspray and smoking and public establishments. I mean, we were just bombarded with all this stuff. And yeah, I wasn't surprised that a lot of kids, you know, in that era grew up with asthma and allergies. And I mean, even today there's other reasons for it, but that's just fascinating how you've, you know, begin to study the effect on the immune system like that. Anything else that you kind of learned about the immune system that you wanted to talk about as it relates to plastics?
Well, let me see. I've got my, BPA induces TH2 and TH17. It enhances autoantibodies. It inhibits the secretion of interferon gamma. Let's see what else we have. There's a lot of connection between phthalates and allergies and asthma, which I found very interesting. Phthalates heighten the risk for childhood asthma. 95% of the DEHP, the diethylhexyl phthalate, is used for PVC. That's that polyvinyl chloride that's used in flooring and, you know, your shower curtain, and it's found in dust indoors. And, you know, they're making correlations. Sweden did a lot of studies on phthalates in children and asthma. And so they just measured the phthalates in the house dust and, you know, checked with the kids to see what kind of allergic symptoms they had. And they just found a lot of correlation. What else do we have? Asthma, allergies, phthalates, a lot of phthalates, bisphenols. And then, you know, I'm not going to talk about the connection with cancer too much, except to say that we are seeing propensity for both breast and prostate cancer in the babies that were prenatally exposed to the BPA when these things were forming. And so there's varying windows of vulnerability to developmental things that are going on that make a big difference into whether or not you were exposed to these things. And so we are seeing things like that. You know, there's so much more to say, arsenic and cancer and, you know, all the places. Arsenic isn't a plastic, but there's just so much to learn here. Mm-hmm. My latest module I'm working on for this is actually oncogenic exposures. And, you know, we've got about 4 hours of information, and we're trying to get rid of stuff so that we can fit it into the time allotted. We're just trying to get rid of stuff. No, no good. It's crazy. Plastics are, you know, there's so many things in our environment that are immunotoxic. And as you know, just from being a clinician, people are getting sicker and they're more plagued by, you know, viruses that may have been latent and now they're reactivated, and, you know, susceptibility to current viruses and cancer and autoimmune disease. And we're seeing these things kind of at lower and lower ages. Are you seeing that as well?
Definitely. I think, you know, there's a combination of both like awareness and people calling out their health problems more though as well. So I think there's a combination of an acceptance to bring things up that might not fit within a box that I'm seeing. But I'm seeing so many more health problems in the 20s than I've ever seen before. Like, it used to be I think it's shifted 10 years since I've been in practice. We hardly ever would see 20-year-olds come through. I mean, they were busy just living their life. Mm-hmm. And now I see so many 20-year-olds coming into my clinic with problems that usually would have presented later. Metabolic problems, allergy problems, digestive problems, lots of mental health concerns. So, yeah, skin,
infertility,
yes.
The neurobiology of plastics is kind of a newish area, and I just want to call out, I talk about it. I also have a podcast.
Oh, okay. Please tell us the name of it by the end of the...
Well, it's the EMEI Review Podcast, and it's you can get it on emeiglobal.com. Cool. It's separate from the course, but if you take the course, we throw it in. It is behind a paywall, and it's we review the literature and we just keep everyone up to date. But there's a new study where they looked at mixtures of endocrine disruptors, because normally things look at one chemical at a time, which of course is completely different from how our patients come to us, right? They have thousands of exposures, and it's misleading when we do a little test and we can test for 20 of them, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's misleading. But anyway, so the article was mixtures of endocrine disrupting chemicals like BPA and phthalates. Okay. And they looked at it. It was in human beings, and they found that speaking. It was neurodevelopmental delays in speaking. And so then they took it a step further, because that's neurobiology. That's not cancer or anything morphological. And so they took it a step further and they said, but how many pregnant women likely have this level of chemicals in their body? And it was 54% of pregnant women have that particular level or this combination. I just reviewed it, and it was kind of like, the reason they came up with the blend of chemicals was that they already looked at pregnant women and what chemicals they had in them. And they found out that like 90% or more of pregnant women all had the same group of chemicals. And then they went on to say 54% of them have enough, or the level that shows the decline in speaking. I'm trying to think of what, I think it was 30%. Their developmental speaking abilities declined by 30%, which is kind of a lot. Mm. So anyway, so mixtures of endocrine disruptors, that's one of my pet peeves, is that when you look at the studies, I like to see the mixtures. And they're starting to do a few more of those, which I think mimics real life a lot better than just these BPA studies. And, recently, I will say this, the European EFSA, which is kind of like their FDA, they recently made a determination on BPA, and they said that on average, people, human beings, have 5,000 times more BPA in them than is considered safe. 5,000 times more in them. And BPA is like the poster child for endocrine disruptor. It's every time you do more studies, you find it does more things. It's got cardiovascular effects, right? It's not just an endocrine disruptor. It's got the immune effects. It's got neurobiology. And, every time they look, they find more and more things. They're looking at BPA as a biomarker for renal damage now. Mm-hmm. Well, the kidney is what's filtering out a lot of these toxins, right?
Yeah. So, is just going BPA free enough?
No, it's not. I'm glad you said that. BPA free is like a marketing gimmick put out by the manufacturing industry. And it's, BPA free means they use BPS or BPF or BPAF. All of these are regrettable substitutions from the same bisphenol family, and they have similar problems. Sometimes they have, like, BPS is worse for some things than others. I really get into the nitty gritty on this, but just go plastic free. Don't go BPA free. BPA. In fact, Japan. All right, Japan in the 90s, they did a lot of work on BPA. Believe it or not, in the 90s. Hello, where was the U.S.? And they decided in Japan. They decided it's no good. We're going to ban it from production and manufacturing. And you're thinking that's good. But what they did is they substituted BPS.
Okay.
And so what they discovered was going forward, you know how we do the NHANES data and we find out how much, that's where we get our averages. Well, they do that, not everywhere, but in Japan, they discovered, much to their delight, they discovered that BPA plummeted. You couldn't even find the stuff. But then when they tested BPS, they had more than any other country in the world. Because they just swapped out one for the other. They were on the right track.
Sure.
They were on.
So most people, have the belief that, they can do their plastics as long as they don't heat them or, use them kind of for reheating or what have you. Is that a myth?
Yes, I believe it is a myth.
And
I like to say, just don't use the plastics.
Okay. So, but I mean, is there studies out there that can show, even without heating them, that we still get exposures?
Well, let's talk about sparklets water that comes in the polycarbonate, big, the fiber.
Yes. That's a great example.
Because I actually had a patient who she had kidney cancer like twice before she came to see me. And she was one of those patients who, as a physician, I was like, I don't know what to do with her. She ate clean. She ate organic. She was a fiend for dusting her home because, there's toxins in house dust. She had an air filter. And everything was so good. She's one of those patients where you're thinking to yourself, I'm not exactly sure what to do with you. I don't know why you have kidney cancer. But she was drinking water out of a sparklets container, the polycarbonate. And so I said, let's look into that a little bit more. And her doctor said, I've operated on your kidneys twice. I can't do it again. That was a lot. You can't get kidney cancer again. So that's why she came to me. And I looked at the water report on the Sparklets website. It was great. The water looked clean, right? But the problem is you don't know that bottle of water. You don't know if it sat on a hot truck for, 8 hours, or are they all stored in a warehouse for 2 weeks? You just don't know what's going on in that bottle. And I had her switch out to glass bottles, and she's been. I can't say that that was the reason why, but it was like the only. Oh, she had clean personal care products. It was like the only problem that I could see was that 100% of her water, including cooking water, came from bottled water that had been sitting in a BPA thing. And Sparklets says on their website. They're on it. They know they're going to be asked, do you have BPA? And they're like, yes. And the FDA says it's okay. So we're okay with it because the FDA is okay with it. So they're acknowledging it, that they're in the bottle. So in terms of specific studies, I haven't seen a lot of them on like plastic, like Tupperware. Does that get into your stuff? I've seen studies on like pizza boxes. So we're not talking about plastic. The pizza box has a chemical in it. And when the pizza goes in, it crusts down. So it's dry, not those, the dry part. They've done studies and this chemical does leach up even over the space of, 20 minutes. It leaches up into a dry crust from a pizza box. Mm-hmm. So the food packaging studies, there's not as many as them, but I have looked at some of them. And it's like, I don't know what to say about like Tupperware container, because I think that's the one people get hung up on. As long as I don't put it in the microwave, you know, am I okay? And then I want to know, but when you put the food in the Tupperware, was it hot then? You know?
Right.
Or did you cool it down completely? So I don't know. I mean, at some point you're splitting hairs, but because it's just as easy to buy those glass containers with the snap-on lids, you know, I have people store their food in that. And, you know, often, sometimes the top may have plastic in it. I'm not worried about that because the food's not touching that part.
Sure. There's some space. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some space. So I do like that. I just, you know, just get all the plastics out that you can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, if you're like in the hospital, if you're like a newborn baby in the hospital ICU and you're getting IVs, I mean, there's plastics in there, but you know, that could save your life, right?
Right.
So obviously there's some exposures, you know, or if you go to the airport and, you know, you can't bring your water in, you cannot bring any glass in. Well, I feel it's better to have a glass, a plastic bottle of water. I think that's preferable to dehydrating.
Exactly. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So you have to be mindful of it. And
mindful and reasonable, you know.
And reasonable, because you know that flying is dehydrating. So do you really just want to say, no plastics, no plastics, and then you get in an airplane and you're completely dehydrated?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so the going into talking a little bit more about Dr. Crinian, you know, so for those of the people who are just tuning in, Dr. Crinian, who has passed away, is a legend in the space of environmental medicine within lots of circles, naturopathic medicine, functional medicine, integrative medicine. And he was a teacher for many of us and set the stage for a lot of the way that we approach environmental medicine. Going back to the first time I ever heard him speak, he had these kind of principles of environmental medicine. And like number one on his list was, and he would say it like three or four times, like avoidance, 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 which, you know, as I've heard you talk, I would love to hear his updated spin on that today, 2022, and what he would say with that.
Too, it's still avoidance. The number one rule of environmental medicine is still avoidance. It just still is. I mean, it's so much better to just avoid the thing in the first place so you don't have to do an intervention later. And so we just, as clinicians, we have to just become very clear on the educational portion of what we tell our patients. And I think there's room for improvement. Even in myself, I've noticed that I'm huge on the educational component, and sometimes I'll have seen a patient, you know, three or four times, and they'll walk into my office and either be carrying a plastic bottle or say, yeah, I still get those Costco waters. And I'm just like, but we talked about it. And,
right. You
know, so there's some sort of a disconnect. And I think that we have to be clearer, and I think we have to be more clear on if there's, I think BPA and plastics is the number one thing to avoid. I think it's going to have the most clinical usefulness in our patients' health. I mean, they're connecting phthalates and BPA with diabetes and obesity. I have a note here. Oh, I want to read it. It's like, this was good. Hang on. Okay. The CDC says from 2001 to 2009, diabetes increased 30% in 8 years, type 1 and 2, 30%. So did our patients just sit on the couch and stop exercising? Are they eating Snickers for breakfast? Or, you know, what could account for that? So this is big news. It should not be big news to your audience, but it's like it's not the food and the lack of exercise anymore. 1 billion metric tons of BPA, that's how much our production increased.
Amazing.
In the same years that diabetes went up 30%.
Wow.
So chemical and metabolic activity cannot be discounted. And a lot of our patients, they're metabolically deranged.
Mm-hmm. Whether it's That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Like just last week, I saw a post by Stephen Guionette, Dr. Stephen Guionette, who wrote the a book on obesity that's quite popular, and he it's called The Hungry Brain, and he had just talked how, you know, he showed a slide of how our macronutrients have actually, the protein to fat to carbohydrate ratio really haven't changed that much over time. So, you know, people are, you know, blaming it on, oh, people have just started eating a bunch of carbs. Mm-hmm. No, they haven't. Mm-hmm. Or people have just started eating a lot of fat. Mm-hmm. Well, no, they haven't. We've basically eaten the same kind of percentages as a population. So I love that you point out other factors beneath this that have changed in our population that could be disrupting the metabolism. Mm-hmm. So important and so overlooked. Nobody wants to hear it. Nobody wants to deal with it. It's sort of like, you know, yeah, whatever. It's, you know, what are you going to do? But it's so important, and there are things you can do about it. And the second kind of thing, that principle that we talk about, is like elimination. And, you know, I think that would be another area of your expertise, is like, okay, you have this burden and you're doing your best with avoidance, but you've accumulated this burden of toxins and plastic metabolites, and then, you know, how do we get rid of it? What's unique about plastics in that process of elimination? Just like some highlights.
Well, you know, it's interesting. A study was done on weight loss and toxins, and what they found was, it was a human study, and what they found was, after, I don't remember how many pounds, I don't know, 10 or 20 pounds, it wasn't 100. They checked people's blood for toxins before the weight loss diet and after, and what they found was, after the weight loss diet, there were so many more toxins in the blood. Because why? They didn't eliminate it from their body. So now you flooded your bloodstream with, you had lipolysis and you liberated all of these toxins. Now they're in your bloodstream. They're going to your brain, going to your thyroid, your other tissues, and they're just kind of being restored somewhere else. But unless your arteries are open, I know that's a really naturopathic word, unless you are eliminating properly, you probably should not do an intervention to reduce body burden, because you're just shifting it around. And they also saw in the study that the people who lost the weight, you know, they had headaches and things. Well, yeah, because you're recirculating all these toxins. It's like when you get constipated and you get a headache. It's like you're getting double duty from those toxins.
Yeah.
But the first time, now you're just going to, recirculate again. So detoxification, or having the organs of elimination open, is really critical to doing any kind of detoxification. And if you start to detox your patient without making sure those pathways are open, they will not be happy, and they will call your office and let you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good thing, that, and it should be a red flag of, you know, anybody who's touting a detox program that hasn't asked you first if are you stooling properly, you know, because like that should be like number one goal, you know, is to like you said, open up the routes of elimination. And I think it sounds so simple, but a lot of people are constipated, and that's,
and they don't know it, and they don't know it.
They don't know it
because they went to the regular doctor, and regular doctors, I forget exactly where we're at, but I think it was like one stool every 3 days.
Exactly.
That was normal.
Yeah. I mean, most people would feel absolutely miserable if they're not stooling, you know, if they would go 3 days without stooling.
Right.
Occasionally you'll talk to someone and they have a bowel movement every 2 days or so, and they feel fine. But most people, I'd say that's the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree.
So, well, this has been really fascinating. I would just love to kind of hear anything more or wisdom that you might want to share about this topic, and then kind of leave us with some parting words and just ways for people to,
follow. Yeah. Oh, I just want to leave you with a, I think it's a good tip. People seem to like this tip. So we talked a lot about plastics, but BPA is found on thermal receipt paper, and we get it at the gas station. We get it at the grocery store. We get it everywhere. And so what I do tell people, because remember I said it only takes a few seconds to absorb. What I say is, you know, if you're at the grocery store, just say, I don't need a receipt. Do you need a receipt? If you're at a department store and you're buying something expensive, yeah, maybe you want the receipt in case you need to return it. So in that case, I have in my purse, I have an envelope or a pouch, and I put them in there. Because, your dollar bills in your wallet are full of BPA because men put their receipts in their wallet, and then it just goes on the money. And so if you segregate them somewhere where it's not touching, because we women, when we want to get something out of our purse, we're not even looking. We put our hand and we're like rummaging in our purse. We're just touching, you know, BPA. So you want to segregate it. You want to say, no, I don't want it. Or if you need it, you segregate it. But also what I do at the post office or the bank, you do want your banking receipts. You do want to make sure that those got deposited. I ask them to put it in an envelope before they give it to me. Mm-hmm. Same thing at the post office. I ask them. Because you want, if you mail something, you do want your receipt to make sure it gets there and you have a tracking number. I ask them. Nobody over the last, 10 years that I've been doing this, or 5 years, nobody has ever said, we don't give out envelopes or anything
right,
like that.
Right.
And so you can have them put it in the envelope, and then it's segregated in your purse. And if you need it, yeah, touch it if you need it. But, we got to stop touching those. And there's a lot of hand sanitizer going around these days. Hand sanitizer it's mostly alcohol. It's a penetration enhancer. And the amount of BPA that goes in after using hand sanitizer is about 100-fold more. So you just don't want to touch those things. You really want to keep that in mind too. And then I think that's probably my best tip. And then don't do fragranced items. Just don't do it. Don't do those plug-in air fresheners. Those are the worst. They pump out phthalates, formaldehyde, benzene, all the carcinogens into your home. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, it's fascinating. I'd love to hear your take on this. I once, because you commented earlier about people still do this stuff, even though we've said it. I've heard something really interesting is that if we understand the mechanics of making a decision. So what we're technically doing when we make a decision is we're bargaining with our perceived future based on that decision. So like, for example, if I decide, oh, I'll grab the plastic receipt, I'm bargaining that the inconvenience of and the uncomfortability of saying, hey, can you email it to me or put in an envelope is more painful than just grabbing the receipt. But if we ask ourselves, what's the future implications of, repeated grabbing these receipts, then we might make different decisions. Like, so we're actually perceiving like the short-term pain is greater than the long-term pain. And it's just interesting because I think we all do that, based on various decisions. But if we were really clued into like what we're voting on with each of our decisions or what we're banking on, it might change our behaviors.
Yeah. And I think part of it is just making a new habit. It takes a while to get a new habit. I remember when I was first trying to think of how not to touch all these receipts, and you're right, you brought up one that I forgot to say, just have it emailed to you. But I remember I was embarrassed to ask anybody for an envelope. Like, that's an extra step for them. Not to, they have to get it and then they have to touch my receipt, put it in it. That's two extra. I was so embarrassed. I was kind of mortified. But they never, nobody ever blinks. Nobody ever says anything or blinks. So now that's my habit.
And guess what? If you ask, then they don't have to touch it either.
So
yeah.
So you're like protecting two people.
Yeah. So I think we need to, what you said is valid. And then sort of, I think people need to be led into some new habits. And if you have those glass containers around your home, or you made the switch to a water filtration system, you know, it's done. You don't have to like think about it anymore. I think sometimes lab results can be telling. I had a gentleman with a testosterone level that was pretty low. And I said, well, you know, you can imagine me. The first thing that has to go is all your plastics and all your cans. And you know, we do get those patients who are very compliant, right? And so he did that. And it just turned out, for whatever reason, I got another testosterone lab on him before I did any other intervention. In other words, we were waiting for some other stuff to come in. And he happened to get a new, and so there was only like 4 to 6 weeks in between these two testosterone reports. And the only thing that happened was he got rid of all his plastic and all his cans. And the testosterone level went up 30%.
Wow.
So for someone like that, when they can see with their own eyes that a much revered hormone is going up in them without any exogenous administration, with one simple change.
Yeah.
You know, that was pretty compelling.
That's great. Yeah, it's really great. And, you know, that's a great place to conclude, is that, you know, the exciting thing about environmental medicine is, without taking a pill or a potion or medication, just by living choice by choice, day by day, and making decisions that are best for your health and your family, like, you're doing the medicine. Like, it's part of living.
Right.
So, well, thank you so much for being with us. This was fascinating. I know you have lots of other really great topics to share, so I appreciate you going down this one kind of road with me. And your course sounds fascinating. We'll make sure we put more information about that up in our notes, and when we you know, kind of share it with our audience. And a lot of clinicians would definitely, you know, I'm sure once they read the curriculum, would just be excited to dive in.
All you have to do is go to our website and listen to our testimonials, read our testimonials, look at the curriculum. It's fantastic. And it's such an engaged group, and they get so much out of it. And the cases we get are amazing. So,
that's great.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having me on, Dr.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Excellent. You're welcome back anytime.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of the One Thing Podcast. Please share these episodes with your friends, loved ones, colleagues, patients, healthcare providers, anyone who you feel might benefit from hearing these informative interviews. We tend to learn best from people sharing things with us. That's often the first time it's introduced. So don't hesitate if the content of these episodes reminded you of someone that might benefit from it. Forward the episode to them, and I'm sure they'll either appreciate it or be appreciative that you've thought of them. So once again, we'll look forward to seeing you next episode on the One Thing Podcast. And again, much appreciation for you being here with me.